Hello and welcome back to the Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris, and for the first time in a while, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host Harry. Life has really gotten in the way these past couple of months, but now that we're back in another lockdown, we've got all the time in the world to talk about football. And I've certainly missed it. I'm sure Harry's missed it as well. And there's been a lot of football that's happened in our absence, I think it's fair to say. So I was just, thinking there's a good way to sort of come back, start out, sort of reboot the podcast as it is, because it's been quite a bit since we've discussed football on this podcast. I thought, just go through each team, discuss how they're going, the past few games, the form that they've been in, what they need to potentially do in January, what the end of the season looks like for them, all that sort of stuff. Usually we'd go down from the top, but I thought, just spice it up a little bit. We'll go start at the bottom and work our way up. So, Harry, talk us through Sheffield United, because it's not really been the best of seasons, I don't think it's fair to say, for Sheffield United. Where's it gone wrong?
Everywhere. I don't know. You can clearly see that their strong point is their defence, if you were to highlight anywhere, because Aaron Ramsdale has made some of the most saves in the league. So to keep... to have only conceded 29 when the likes of West Brom conceded 39, that does show that they have got a good defence-ish. But the 8 goals in 17 games, that's a massive, massive issue. Because there are games that they've lost, a 1 or 2 goal margin. You just think, had they had better front line, they could definitely come away with possibly a win or a draw. And they... I'm surprised they're sticking with Chris Wilder at this point. I know he's very important in bringing them up, to where they are. But even Saints sacked Nigel Atkins when they brought him up from League One, midway through their first season back in the Premier League.
Well, I mean, I think Chris Wilder is probably one of the most important parts of Sheffield United. He's the person that makes them tick. And at the end of the day, say they did sack Chris Wilder, who realistically are they going to be able to bring in that would do a better job than Chris Wilder? Because I think it's fair to say that they are down. I don't think there can be many arguments that they're going to survive. But who would be better to bring them back up? You're looking at the likes of Tony Pulis.
Yeah. I don't know, they just feel really stale. I mean, the loss of Henderson's a big one. But they've replaced him with a player who's got some of the most saves, so it does show he has definitely got the capacity to fill the boots of or gloves of Henderson. But their weak point for the past couple of seasons has been their goals, and they failed to address that.
I think they probably thought that the signing of Rian Brewster would bring more goals than it has done. Obviously, £25 million, I think it was, they spent on him. Liverpool do have a buyback clause, so it is essentially a glorified loan move. For £25 million in a club in Sheffield United's position, a player like that needs to be scoring 15 goals a season, and they're just not... Brewster just hasn't kicked on. I don't think the loss of Henderson is as bad as people make it out to be. Obviously, Henderson was a good goalkeeper. I think he's a better goalkeeper than Aaron Ramsdale. But Ramsdale, he's made 3.5 saves per game. So it's not like he's, been like Kepa. It's not like he's letting the goal fly by him. But I think it's mainly to do with the loss with Jack O'Connell as well. You know, club captain, and was essential not only for the defensive work last season, but also providing the attack. You know, Sheffield United were known for the overlapping centre-backs under Chris Wilder. So that's something that they've really severely lacked, is that extra dimension in attack that, you know, was something that was crucial to them scoring last season, and it's something that they haven't replaced.
Yeah. But they don't bring in too much youth in mind, because the likes of Ampadu, the likes of Ryan Brewster, and the likes of Oliver Burke and Jaden Bowe, you know, a bunch of others. I think they needed some like a bit of veteran, because there's just a complete lack of Premier League experience, and it's very apparent.
I mean, they do have quite a few experienced heads. You know, you're looking at the likes of Jagielka, you know, likes of Basham, you know, you've got, what's his face? Bollocks.
Yeah, great player.
Ollie Norwood, that's who I was thinking of. You know, you've got Billy Sharp up front, you've got David McGoldrick. You know, you've got quite a few older players. I just think it's the fact that the younger players that they've brought in haven't stepped up to the mark as much as they thought they would have done. I think they're definitely expecting a lot more from the likes of Ampadu. Lowe and, to a greater extent, Bogle haven't been given chances at all. You know, you look at Bogle, the only two Premier League games that he's played were half an hour against Brighton, in which he scored, and then 90 minutes against Crystal Palace. So he hasn't really been given a chance at all, really. But, you know, I do think that Sheffield United do look pretty doomed. I think, to be honest with you, at this point, it's all about not breaking Derby's record of lowest ever points of 11.
In the position they're in, you know, they saw the, you know, the complete downslide after the return from lockdown, the first lockdown rather. And then they go and sign young players, and then in regards to the veteran, you know, there's only one that's got Premier League experience, and that's Phil Jagielka. I think he's the oldest outfield player, isn't he, to have been in the Premier League?
It would not surprise me. I think he's 38, isn't he? So
yeah,
there's no one in who I can think of at the moment who's 38 and outfield. I mean, Bardsley's 36. So he's the only person that popped into my head. No, I can't think of anyone else.
I mean, there's someone being a veteran and then, you know, being, you know, completely useful on the pitch, and then there's someone who should be, you know, well past their prime, should be considering paying up the boots. I think. They should be looking into 30-year-olds who are still, you know, still somewhat in their primes. Or, you know, I don't know, definitely up top, because the players that they have got, they're in their 30s, but they do not have Premier League experience, and that's very apparent.
I think, you know, I don't know, because the thing is, when you see Sheffield United play, they are unlucky. They're only losing games by one or two, like you say, and they're playing well.
Yeah, but I think that's because of the defence. and the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
If they had even a half decent strike force, they'd definitely be on a lot more points.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the way that, I don't want to bang on about play style or all like that, but I'm saying with the chances that they're creating and, you know, the moves that they're doing, you know, they don't look like a team that hasn't won all season. Like,
is that another issue, though, their midfield? Are they not creating enough good chances? I don't really follow what the XG stats. I don't really know.
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head. I don't know. I just think they seem a lot more predictable than they did last season. I don't know whether that's because teams have figured them out or whether, you know, the loss of O'Connell, you know, whether, you know, that's had as much as an impact as it's made out. I'm not sure, but they don't seem to have that sort of thrust like they did last season.
Well, let's say they did have Jack O'Connell, but they're still not winning games. There's a bunch of games they're failing to score in.
Well, Jack O'Connell hasn't played all season.
Yeah, I'm saying that if he had, I don't think it would make much of a difference because the other side of the pitch, there's little to no results.
Yeah, but Jack O'Connell
provided
quite a bit of attacking threat as well. That's what I'm saying. You know, there were many a times where last season O'Connell was making, you know, marauding runs into the box.
Okay. You know, with the strikers they got, was that add what an extra couple of goals and then take a few off that they're conceding? I still think they're in a bad situation.
Yeah, but you know, if O'Connell were back in the side, they'd probably be sat on, you know, at least 5 or 6 points, and 5 or 6 points is a hell of a lot more healthy than 2. So.
They definitely need a new centre back and a completely new strike force. I don't think Liverpool are going to ever look into that point back clause.
Well, I mean, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with Brewster. I mean, he's only 20 years old, so he's still got, you know, another 15 years ahead of him. So.
Why are you saying that he should be on 15 goals a season?
Well, no, I'm saying for the price that Sheffield United paid for him, you expect that sort of price tag to return that over the course of a season.
Yeah.
Especially when you're down in relegation zone. You know, when you're a top six club or, you know, a bigger team, you can afford to pay that sort of money on a young prospect that will turn out to be worth it 3 or 4 years down the line. But when you're in that relegation scrap, you know, you can't afford to be spending that sort of money on it. So, and you'd think, you know, in terms of the January transfer window, I can't see there being much activity coming in for Sheffield United. I think, you know, if anything, they should be looking to move on players like Sander Berge, you know, players of that sort of ilk, whilst they still have quite a bit of value. Because you've got to think, as soon as Sheffield United go into the Championship, Sander Berge's value halves. So.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's many players that would like to go from mid-table to bottom of the league.
Exactly, yeah. And when you've got, you know, teams like Arsenal sniffing around Sander Berge, you know, you've got to think that it'd be hard for Sheffield United to keep hold of, Sander Berge, especially into next season. So. Is there all else you want to say about Sheffield United, or are we to move on?
Move on.
Right, well, we'll go on to West Brom then. Obviously, you know, a team who were struggling, and since our last recording, you know, off the back of a 1-1 draw away at the Etihad, West Brom decided to sack Slaven Bilic and bring in, you know, experienced relegation veteran Sam Allardyce to try and shore things up for West Brom. And that's led them to concede 13 goals in the last four games that Sam Allardyce has been there. What do you think about the appointment of Sam Allardyce, first off, Harry?
I cannot understand why they sacked Birch. Because, I mean, you just come off a massive, massive point against Man City, and then that was very trigger happy.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, he did well to get a draw away at Anfield, did Allardyce, but Bilic got a draw at Man City, so you'd think, you know, Bilic probably would have done something against. Yeah. And, you know, I just don't get it, because you back Bilic in the summer, you get him, Carlin Grant, Dean Garner, Pereira, Gallagher on loan, Robinson, you get him all these players, and then you go and sack him. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And at the end of the day, you know, they're not going to have Sam Allardyce as their manager next season, you know, whether they stay up or not. So it's just such a short-sighted move. I really don't understand it.
I mean, do you think they're going to back him in this window?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think that would be one of the things that Allardyce would have wanted, because he didn't have to come back into management at the end of the day. I mean, he's in his mid-60s. He's made his money from football, so he didn't have to come back into management. So I think one of the things that will have been promised to him is that the owners would back him in January, and you'd think that he would probably look to be bringing in, you know, not to try and stereotype Allardyce, but you would be thinking he's bringing in sort of, you know, the experienced 30, 31, 32-year-olds, relegation specialists, most likely British. You'd think he'd be bringing in some of those sorts of players to sort of shore things up. Because West Brom's defence has been absolutely shocking this season. You know, people talk about, you know, Sheffield United not being able to score. You know, they talk about us not being able to score. They talk about Leeds' defence. West Brom's defence has been god-awful. 39 goals conceded in 17 games. That is more than two a game. That's just under 2.5 a game. That is absolutely atrocious.
I mean, I'm not 100%. I don't know who they're linked to, but I like Semi Ajayi. I think he'll definitely be in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, I like him as well. I think that he is definitely a very quality centre-half. I know that they've been linked very heavily with Snodgrass. Apparently, they've already agreed a deal for him, of West Brom, and it's going to be announced on Friday, apparently.
Is he at Norwich?
No, he's at West Ham.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, he was at Norwich a while back, but
that rings a bell.
Yeah.
Norwich isn't Buendia going to Arsenal?
There's been a lot of he said, she said sort of things from that side. You know, a lot of people claiming to know a lot that they perhaps don't know. But yeah, that is, you know, again, not to stereotype. It is a pretty stereotypical Allardyce signing. Is Snodgrass, you know, 33-year-old, Premier League experience, and he comes in. But you know, to me, West Brom don't need a winger. Like, you know, I don't know. I think West Brom have been very short-sighted. And when you look at some of the other teams in and around the relegation zone, you know, I can't see West Brom being better than two of them. You know, I think West Brom are looking in deep, deep trouble. You know, 6 points ahead of 6 points behind Brighton in 17th, sorry. And yeah, it's going to be a struggle for them to pull it out. You know, because who knows if Big Sam still has it or not.
Well, I mean, this is from a source I've never heard before. But it says West Brom are linked with Josh King.
I mean, a lot of Premier League... I mean, basically the entire bottom half of the Premier League has been linked with Josh King. I know we've been linked with Josh King. I know West Ham have been linked with Josh King. I know Crystal Palace have been linked with Josh King.
I think West Ham is a good shout. Sold a striker today.
Yeah, Allaire going to Ajax. But yeah, I just think West Brom, you know, I can't see any way out for him, to be honest with you. Well, I can see a way out for him, but I don't think it's very likely, to be honest with you. But yeah, have you got anything else you want to add on West Brom, or we move on?
Let's move on.
Right, well, we'll go to Fulham then, currently sat in 18th place. Only the two wins all season. You know, sat on 11 points, 3 points behind Brighton, but with two games in hand over them. You know, recently had the games against Burnley and Spurs postponed. And coming off the back of four draws, you know, against Liverpool, Brighton, Newcastle and Southampton, Fulham really have seemed to turn it around. You know, at the start of the season, they were looking pretty poor. They were looking very defensively naive. But they only conceded two in the last four. And they are definitely having an upturn in form. And yeah, I think that Fulham are definitely going to be looking to buy in this January transfer window. I think that's Fulham's style. And things are definitely looking a lot more positive for Fulham than they were, say, 8 or 9 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But with this COVID outbreak, that might put a halt to it.
With what, sorry?
The COVID outbreak that they
had. Yeah, you know,
halting momentum.
Mitrovic being a very silly boy, you know, going out and partying on New Year's Eve, which was, you know, thick, which, you know, ended up getting another outbreak in the Fulham squad. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think. I don't know about Fulham.
Strange. I mean, that's a definitely a halt in momentum they didn't want. I mean, what was it now? 2 weeks off?
Yeah.
I Who is our next game?
Well, they've got, if they do go ahead, they've got QPR in the cup on Saturday, and then next they've got Chelsea at home, Man United at home, and then two big games, Brighton away and West Brom away.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see them picking up points in the next two games, for sure, but you never know with Chelsea.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they have been linked with some decent players. You know, you're looking at Shiriki Dembele, you know, Peterborough United. You're looking at Dwight Gayle, you know. So I think... Dwight Gayle.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, he has played relatively well when he's played for Newcastle. But he isn't really getting many starts. You know, you're looking at Wilson and Joe Linton ahead of him. And I think Dwight Gayle's a decent little striker. I don't know about you, but, you know, I think he's decent.
I think he's good at Palace. But definitely not now.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's only had, you know, like, he's probably only had like 100 minutes or something this season, you know. And he has a goal this season. And, you know, you look at when he was at West Brom in the Championship, was it two seasons ago, I think, where he got 25 goals? Gayle got 25 goals in Championship two seasons ago, I think. So he's clearly still got something about him.
Yeah. Well, so if they don't want him... well, he's a good penalty taker, if I recall, as well. He definitely needs that.
Yeah.
It depends. If they're able to give him first team football, then for sure. I mean, better than signing nobody, because some of the strikers they've had, in particular that donut Mitrovic, has been awful.
Yeah, Mitrovic. I don't know, because he performed well two seasons ago when he was in the Premier League. I think he hit double figures. So I don't know what's up with him. And then you're looking at Kamara, who's been the backup forward, who hasn't really hit things going. You know, you're looking at, you know, the likes of Bobby Reid, they've been relying on for scoring. I like Bobby Reid. I think he's a decent player. He can play, you know, on the left, on the right, up front, in midfield. He's even been playing as a wing back occasionally. So I think he is a very good player. But yeah, like, they do look like they need more goals, especially from up front.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's hard to pinpoint who's been a shining light for them, though.
I really like that... how'd you pronounce it? That Andre Frank Zambo, Anguissa, is it?
Anguissa, yeah.
That is he Cameroonian, the midfielder?
Yeah, I think.
I want to say he's Cameroonian. Yeah, but he's really impressed me. I think he's definitely been one of their best players. And as well, I'm a fan of Adara Bioyo. I think that's how you pronounce it. Why do they have so many players whose names are hard to pronounce? What the hell? But yeah, I'll just call him Tosin. I'm a big fan of Tosin. I think he played well as well.
Oh, Adarabio, yes.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it, yeah.
What, from Blackburn and Man City?
Yeah, ex-bastards, yeah. He's played pretty well for him this season.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not too sure about Olaina. He's an ex-Chelsea player, so...
Yeah. I mean, you know, coming through at the same time as James and Lamptey, you know, Aina was always going to struggle to get minutes.
Yeah.
I just think that they just need a more clinical forward. You know, you're looking at Fulham being ninth in terms of big chances missed. They've missed 19 big chances this season. So they clearly do need to be more clinical in front of goal. Yeah, I think someone like a Dwight Gayle could really help that.
Yeah. I mean, how many goals have they conceded this season?
23. So if you look at the teams around them, you know, it's less than West Brom, less than Sheffield United, less than Brighton, less than Newcastle, less than Crystal Palace. Only Burnley, really, of the teams around them have conceded less goals than them.
Yeah, that's...
So, you know, for all the characteristics of Fulham having an awful defence like they did two seasons ago, I think, especially considering the fact they've basically bought an entire new defence, they're actually doing pretty well.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know about Scott Parker. I just don't. I don't know. He's hit and miss for me.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell that he's a young coach and that he's new to management. Because sometimes he does appear a bit naive, but he does seem like he has a decent footballing brain, you know, as a manager. I mean, he did guide Fulham to promotion. So, you know, but and two seasons ago, it was far too late for him to make any sort of an impact. But, you know, I don't think he's a bad little manager, Scott Parker.
Yeah. Who's next?
Well, we'll move on to Brighton. Yeah, a very funny one this season. What are your thoughts on Brighton, Harry?
The unluckiest team in the English league system for me. One of those big chances is Brighton top of that.
Yeah, I mean, they are. I'll assume that they've been up there for it. Let me have a look. 22 big chances missed.
Yeah. I mean, I just think back to the United game and the Chelsea game, how different that could have been had they had that, you know, strikers who could score, basically. It hit the bar three times against United.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It can't score.
Well, I mean, you say that. I mean, the most recent game was a 3-3 draw against Wolves. So.
Yeah. But it can't score to win games then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've only got two wins all season. The last win was back in November. And the other one was on the second day of the season. They have been in very poor form of Brighton. You look at that squad and they should be in a far better position than they are now. You know, you're looking at some of the transfers they made. You know, they brought in Lallana and Welbeck, who's been great. You're looking at, you know, bringing in experience with Veltman. You're looking at, you know, Lamptey coming in at the end of last season. And they've got a far better squad for the position that they're in. They should be doing a lot better. A lot of Brighton fans are criticising Graham Potter now, saying that, you know, he should be off. I mean, he's currently, the bookies have him the fourth favourite to be sacked next. And yeah, it's an odd one, Brighton. I don't know, they just seem, they're just not clinical enough at the end of the day.
Just watch them, and they have great build-up play, and then they lack that finishing product. So they might need a new manager to help sort that out, or they need backing. Put on these backing inside a new striker. I don't know what the financial situation is at Brighton.
Well, I know the owners are rich, if that's any sort of consolidation. I mean, I know they've been linked with quite a few different players. I know they've been linked with, as have a lot of teams, they've been linked with Dan James on loan, been linked with Jesse Lingard, who's also been linked with basically all of the bottom half Premier League teams. Who's that?
Jesse Lingard.
Yeah, Jesse Lingard. He's been linked with a lot of clubs. I know they've recalled Percy Tau on from loan. He was a striker who was out on loan. And Brighton have obviously decided that they should bring him back. I mean, you know, I don't know. They just need more firepower up front. I'm a fan of Maupay. I think Maupay is a good forward. And I think, you know, for the position that Brighton are in, 6 goals halfway through the season. So if we say he gets 11 or 12, you know, that's a good return for a forward. But after that, you're looking at, you know, Connolly with 2, Welbeck with 2, Gross with 2, you know. So they need someone else to help out Maupay. Yeah, exactly. And he's their joint second top scorer.
Well, I suspect that'd be from penalties. He's a penalty taker. So.
Well, yeah, true.
I think Welbeck's done at Brighton.
Yeah, I think he has as well. I think he plays really well. He clearly works hard. He's a good presser. But, you know, they do need more firepower, and especially with Welbeck picking up another injury, you know, you don't know whether he'll go back to be the typical injury-prone Welbeck of the past.
Yeah, that's definitely the downside of having Danny Mon.
Yeah, and I don't think it helps the fact that they don't seem to know who their number one is either.
Sanchez.
Yeah, they've been playing Sanchez, and he seems to have almost overtaken Ryan. I mean, Ryan has played 11 times this season in the league, kept 2 clean sheets, and Sanchez has played 6 times, kept 1. And yeah, it doesn't seem like they know who their first choice is. I mean, personally, I'd go with Sanchez. I do not rate Ryan at all.
Really?
No, I think he's awful, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, okay. With the stats you just said, it just sounds like him and Sanchez is set to be on the same sort of clean sheets per game.
Yeah, but clean sheets aren't, you know, they're not the be all and end all in terms of goalkeepers and how good they are.
Okay, so give me a stat on how many they've conceded then.
I'll tell you what, actually. Give me a second and I'll find the save percentages for both of them.
Save percentages. Okay.
All right, I can't find it. Fair enough.
Okay.
But Ryan has made almost double the amount of saves. So it is actually pretty even, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So does he look for a new goalkeeper then?
Maybe. I think that could be an area where they need to improve. But I think it's more crucial that they get another forward.
In my opinion.
But yeah, have you got... Oh, what else you want to add on to Brighton?
No.
Right, well, we'll move into the meat of the podcast now. We'll move into, at least in my opinion, the most exciting team at the moment. You know, the club I support, who have recently been subject to a £300 million takeover from AOK Capital. Alan Pace is now the chairman of the board. You know, been injected with quite a bit of cash. He said that he will back Sean Dyche in this transfer window. And to top it all off, we're in great form. You know, only lost one game in his last six. Keeping clean sheet after clean sheet. You know, defensively being absolutely solid. But we need goals. We need goals. Chris Wood has been an absolute donkey this season. He's just missed big chance after big chance. You know, it's just we need more firepower up front. Defensively, we are absolutely fine unless we decide to sell Tarkowski in this window because he has made it clear he wants to leave. But if he doesn't leave this window, defensively, we're absolutely fine. Conceded, you know, the least amount of goals in the bottom half, apart from Arsenal. We've conceded less than Chelsea, than West Ham, less than... Leicester, less than Man United, less than Liverpool, the same amount as Everton. You know, defensively, we're sorted. But going forward, we need more goals. We need another winger. That is crucial. You know, the game against Leeds, we were playing without any wingers. You know, on the wing, we had Eric Peters and Josh Benson, neither of whom are wingers. And you could tell when we were playing that we weren't playing with any wingers. When we played Sheffield United, Brady made all the difference, but you know we still missed Dwight on the left. So bringing in another winger, ideally a right-footed winger, someone to go on the right-hand side because we don't have any of them, is crucial. We've been linked with the likes of Asai Samuel and Yed Wallace, and Dan James are the main three. And Yed Wallace looks the most likely, but you know I'd take any of them three, to be honest with you.
Yed Wallace, I thought it was Jed.
I always thought it was Yed, but it could be Jed. But yeah, I think I'm definitely confident in Alan Pearce in the fact that he will back us in this transfer window. He's been saying all the right things in interviews and Q&As and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that should we stay up this season, which I'm not going to say I'm confident we will, but we definitely have a good chance of staying up. You know, we currently sit, you know, 5 points above the relegation zone. Played two games more than Brighton as well, 2 points ahead of them. I think if we win the games we need to win against teams around us, which has always been our bread and butter, then we should be fine, really. But we just need more goals.
How come you haven't mentioned the striker there?
Well, a winger is probably the first priority because we only have three wingers in the entire squad. But yeah, a striker is probably on another position where we need to look at. You know, Matty Vidra has said he wants to leave in order to get into contention for the Euros, to get into the Czech Republic squad, which, you know, when he's not playing for Burnley, he's not going to get in the Czech Republic squad. So he said he wants to leave. And we have been linked to a few forwards, you know, the likes of Josh Caromo, Tyrese Campbell. You know, you're looking at... What's that?
Is that the Stoke?
Yeah, he's that Stoke, 20 years old, that forward. We probably won't be getting him, considering he's just picked up a three-month injury. But yeah, if Vidra is to leave, we do need another forward as well, because Wood's been a bit of a donkey. J-Rod's been poor, apart from the game against Palace. And Ash is actually coming back to his best, to be fair to him. He's looked very lively these past few games. But we definitely need another forward, as well as another winger.
From the outside of looking in, you've definitely got an older squad. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, so, I think it's between us and Crystal Palace for the oldest squad in the league. I can't remember who actually has it. But we're either the oldest or second oldest squad in the league.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like you need 26, 27-year-old rather than 20-year-old.
Well, you know, I mean, that could be a possibility. I mean, you know, it all depends, you know, who Sean Dyche wants, because at the end of the day, that's who we're going to get, you know. I think that Dyche has been forced to pick up older players because of the limitations in budget. I mean, look at the summer transfer window where we picked up Dale Stevens and that was it. And yeah, he has definitely been very frustrated with the transfer activity in the past couple of seasons. But, you know, I do think with Pearce coming in, we will see, you know, some younger players coming through. I mean, we saw last season in January, we picked up Josh Brownhill for £4 million. And that's, you know, been one of the best signings in the past few years for us. You know, Brownhill currently sits top of most interceptions in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been one of the shining lights this season as Brownhill. He's been absolutely magnificent for us.
Agreed. Is that all from Burnley?
Well, I mean, that's all I can really think of, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, all we really need this window, a winger is the first priority. I think a forward is needed, but it's not necessarily, like, urgent. I think Wood can come back to scoring ways. I think if he scores one or two in a row, he will get his confidence back, because he's getting in the right positions. He's just not finishing them. And Barnes has been very good. So you know, we should be looking at a forward, but it's not the end of the world if we don't get one. And at the end of the day, it's just, you know, if we sell players like Tarkowski, we need to replace them. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, if you compare us to Brighton, Fulham and West Brom, and even some of the teams above us, like Newcastle and Crystal Palace, I'd back us to survive over them teams, I'd say. I think we'll be fine this season.
Three worst teams.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that's all I've got to say on us at the moment.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have said that in November.
No, no. You know, we definitely missed Ben Mee a lot. I think, you know,
he got an inform.
Yeah, he did. I think, you know, he's so important to us. You know, he's been a constant in our defence for the past 11 or 12 years as Ben Mee. He's, you know, such a solid defender, blocks everything. And the fact that he's captain as well is also, you know, going to make it a big miss. You know, he's been partnered with loads of centre-halves. You know, you're looking at Jason Shackle, Michael Duff, Michael Keane, James Tarkowski. And he's just constantly been that rock in defence that raises the game of defenders next to him. You know, and as soon as we got him back, you know, we started on the right track. You know, before we got Ben Mee back, we got 1 point. You know, and then since Ben Mee has returned, we've got 15 points. So that just says it all, really.
Yeah. But wouldn't you, I mean, given the new owners, I don't understand why you'd sell players like Tarkowski.
Well, I mean, you know, yes, we've got new owners, but at the end of the day, we're still not a big club. You know, Tarkowski, his ambition will be to play European football and to get into the England team. Now, I think it's an absolute travesty that Tarkowski isn't being picked for the England team at the moment. He's one of the best centre-backs in the league, you know, regardless of nationality. I think he should walk into that England team. But Burnley players have often gotten overlooked. And, you know, when you're looking at the team sniffing around him, teams like Leicester, teams like West Ham, you know, it's going to be a struggle to keep hold of him. You know, and at the end of the day, yes, we might have more money, but if a team comes in with a £35-40 million offer for him, we can't turn that down. You know, we're not at that position as a club yet.
Yeah.
And especially with Tarky's contracts coming up at the end of next season and it looking like he's not going to re-sign, you know, we'd rather sell him for something than lose him for nothing.
How long have we been doing this?
Well, we're coming up to an hour now, so.
Oh,
I mean, okay. that's a lot of time to spend on five teams. So I mean, we'll move on to Newcastle. You know, what are your thoughts been on Newcastle this season, Harry?
Mixed bag. That's the word that comes to mind immediately. Just sometimes, I don't know, they look really good. Sometimes they look really flat. But they're for what's a Steve Bruce team, essentially, they're overachieving considering the sort of teams he's managed.
Yeah, I just think, you know, they just need to be more expressive. Like, when they play four at the back, when they play, you know, decent football, they get results. You know, the last time they played four at the back was a 2-1 win against West Brom. Ever since then, they switched to five at the back and they haven't won a game since. You know, so I don't know why Bruce is stubbornly sticking with this back five when it doesn't work. You know, and you've got some very creative, dynamic, exciting players. Players like Fraser, Saint-Maximin, Wilson. You know, Wilson has got 8 goals this season, but they're relying on him to basically do all of that up front on his own.
Yeah. I think Wilson's been a really good sign.
I think, you know, when they were at Bournemouth, I think King impressed me personally more than Wilson. But Wilson has definitely proven his worth. I mean, 11 goal contributions, you know, is, you know. Yeah, I know. It's absolute bargain. I mean, he's got a goal every 155 minutes for Newcastle, which is, you know, it's brilliant. But they need to be relying on him less, Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, the other strikers they've got is Andy Carroll.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, some of the I'm looking at currently is, you know, the minutes per goal start. You've got Callum Wilson on a goal every 155 minutes. Then after that, you've got Andy Carroll, a goal every 209 minutes. And that's because he's played 209 minutes this season. And then, you know, and then after that, there's a massive drop-off to Jeff Hendrick, a goal every 412 minutes, 2 goals this season. And then you're looking at goals every 600 minutes, 650 minutes. So they are relying very heavily on Callum Wilson.
Yeah, they should be looking at a strike partner imminently.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to bring in Josh King to reunite that partnership. I think Josh King is too good of a player for the Championship. I think he's definitely good enough to be in the Premier League. And, you know, I just think that, you know, he would be a brilliant signing for Newcastle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely reigniting that partnership is a good way to go.
Because King has basically not been playing all season. I don't know if he's trying to force a move or something, but, you know, he's only got 376 minutes this season for Bournemouth. So I think it's pretty clear that he will be leaving in January.
Question is where?
Well, you'd think that any of the bottom half Premier League teams would be looking to have him. So.
Yeah. I mean, he's 28,
29? I think he's 28. I could be wrong. So he's still got... Yeah, he's 28. So he's still got a good few years on him, still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, apart from that, I mean, I don't think there's too much to say on Newcastle. They're in bad form at the moment, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, a couple of losses and they are dragged right back down into that scrap. So it's all really about keeping the distance for Newcastle. They're not chasing, so the pressure's not on them. And it's all about keeping the pressure off of them, really, you know. But yeah, we're going to move on to Crystal Palace. You know, we're talking about over-reliance on one player at Newcastle, where you can also check that box with Crystal Palace, relying on Wilfried Zaha, also on 8 goals, who's been, you know, pretty great this season after an awful last season, really, for Zaha. I don't know what was up there. I don't know if it was just his mind was somewhere else. But he's really picked it up again this season and become the player that, you know, of the quality that he is. You know, you're looking at other players, Eberechi Eze, has performed really well this season, coming up from the Championship, and being played mainly out of position for Palace, you know. Thing is with Palace, I can see him getting caught out. There's always one team that bombs after the second half of the season. And Palace, they can get complacent. We know this. They lost their last, was it 7 games last season? I think this team under Hodgson can get complacent. It's not like everything's all great for Palace. I mean, they've conceded 29 goals this season, which is, you know, the same as Sheffield United. So, you know, defensively, you know, it's not been all great.
I mean, I know that Tariq Mitchell. He's a good player. But they're definitely missing that Scott Dan Cahill partnership that was really good last season. And Quaid has gone off the ball. Yeah, because they shouldn't be conceding as many goals as they have been. I mean, that 7-0 loss against Liverpool, that definitely highlighted their defensive issues. They are absolutely destroyed in that.
I think that was, you know, that should have really acted as a wake-up call. After that, you know, they lost 3-0 against Aston Villa. And Hodgson was put under pressure. I know that he was one of the favourites to be sacked after those two losses, but he brought it back. He got a draw against Leicester, which is a great result. Beat Sheffield United. But he's got a tough next few games coming up. Got Arsenal and Man City away, West Ham and Wolves at home. And then after that, they've got Newcastle, Leeds, Burnley, Brighton and Fulham. So I think after those 5 games, we'll know whether Palace are going to be dragged down into that relegation scrap or whether they'll be, you know, sitting fairly comfortably, you know, adrift from the relegation zone, whether they've pulled away.
I mean, there are games where they're winning comfortably, i.e. against West Brom and Leeds, you know, 5-1 and 4-1. And then 3-1 win of United. And then there's games where they'll completely fail to score. And there's a bunch of examples. It's kind of hard to... It's really hard to, like, pinpoint where the issues are. I think Eberechi Eze's probably been one of the signing of the season for me. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think he's been very good. I probably won't go that far. But I think he's definitely improved this Crystal Palace side. I think he's been, you know, very good for him. I think that, you know, he's a young player and he'll only get better and could potentially be a, you know, Wolf Zaha replacement, you know, when he leaves. But, you know, I don't know. I think there are a few players short a Crystal Palace. I know they've been linked with Cenk Tosun from Everton, who, you know...
Really?
Yeah, I think he is a good player, Tosun. We haven't seen that in a while, but, you know, under Allardyce, he was brilliant when Everton played to his strengths. you know, as a target man, which, you know, we've seen almost a renaissance of Christian Benteke at Crystal Palace. So maybe Tosin would slot into that role.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, because, I mean, Jordan Ayew hasn't been scoring like he did last season. I mean, last season he got, was it 8 or 9 goals Ayew got last season? But he's only got 1 this season, which is, you know, pretty poor.
Check for you if he got 9 goals.
Yeah, which for a team who's, you know, sat, you know, just above the relegation zone, like, that's a good return.
Yeah. Wow. They're a very inconsistent team.
Hmm.
They can defeat a West Brom 5-1, and then they'll go and lose 7-0 to the top team. It's strange.
Hmm.
You'd expect that from a Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Now, not a mid-table team.
Hmm. But is there all else you want to say about Crystal Palace, or have we to move on?
Let's move on.
Right, we'll go to Wolves. Wolves, who have been struggling this season. I mean, I personally backed Wolves to finish in the top six this season. I mean, that's a big L on my part. But, you know, I think... I don't know what's up with Wolves. They just seem to have lost that luster. I don't know if teams have figured them out or what. Obviously, the injury to Raul Jimenez won't have helped. But Wolves have been pretty poor this season. Do you agree?
Yes, definitely. And missing Jimenez is a massive part of that, because they just seem so directionless in attack, because they just don't have that target man to find. I mean, Fabio Silva is youth and inexperienced. It's so apparent. I mean, 40 million is a lot to command of a player his age. And then there's nothing that warrants that price tag from what I've seen.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know how they were conned into that kind of price tag.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they definitely got a lot for the buck, Di Porto. Because, you know, he's not ready to start up front for a Premier League side. And I think that's been apparent with the fact that Patrick Cutrone has been recalled from his loan at Florentina. So we'll be joining up with the Wolves squad for the rest of the season. They've also been linked with Divock Origi. But, you know, I'm not sure whether that'll go ahead or not. I know Liverpool apparently value him at £25 million. So.
I just pulled that out a lot.
Yeah.
Not worth £25 million.
No, he's not. But yeah, I just, you know, they've definitely been disappointing, Wolves. I think they started off the season really well, but as soon as you saw that injury to Raul Jimenez, you know, they've only got 5 points out of a possible 21 since that injury. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, striking needs to be their number one priority. Be a right winger, because Adama Traore, yes, he's got the most dribbles, but he hasn't scored in a year now.
Yeah, he seems to have sort of lost his thrust almost. I think probably some sort of right-sided winger slash defender is needed, since Nelson Semedo has been one of the worst signings in recent memory for Wolves. I don't know how Barcelona managed to con the way into having Wolves sign him, because he's awful. But yeah, in terms of some of the other forwards that aren't strikers, have been playing really well. I mean, two of Wolves' best players this season have been Neto and Podence, two young attacking wingers. But, you know, they are missing Jimenez. They're missing a big target man up front that can latch onto the crosses. And I think that's something that they definitely need.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Divock Origi is that man, if that's the route they're looking to.
No.
Maybe Arkouts Milik at Napoli.
Maybe. I'm not sure, A, how much he'd cost, and B, whether he'd want to move to Wolves or not. 50 million euros. You know, I'm not sure whether Wolves would be able to fork that out, you know, after spending quite a lot in the summer and in the past few windows as well.
What, 15 million?
Oh, I thought you said 50 million.
No.
Oh, 15 million's a bargain. Snap him up, yeah.
Yeah, because I know Simeone is interested in him.
Yeah.
So if Wolves get him, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a big coup for only 15 million as well. But yeah, and I think they could probably do with another midfielder as well. I think Neves has been very hit and miss this season, and I think Dendonka and Moutinho aren't. They're not playing that well this season. I mean, according to stats, you know, Wolves have only created 11 big chances this season, you know, and they're outperforming their XG of Wolves despite, you know, only scoring 18 goals.
Oh, right.
So they could probably do with another midfielder as well.
Yeah. I like that Vitinha. I think he's definitely got a big upside to him.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's only on loan from Porto, so I'm not sure if there's any agreement there for a future fee or something. But yeah, he definitely does look like a promising youngster.
I mean, creative-wise, I don't can't really think of anyone cheap that they can get. I mean, he loves his Portuguese players, so I'm sure he'll find someone. Oh, I think his name is Bruno Tavares at Lisbon.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think he's a right winger as well. Is his name Bruno Tavares? Oh no, Bruno Tabata, that's his name.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good player that's looking to do.
Yeah, but I think Wolves just need a bit of extra something. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right. But yeah, is that all? No, it's all I've got to say on Wolves. All you got? All you want to add?
No.
No. Right. Well, we're gonna move on. A team that you predicted that would go down, Leeds United.
Yeah, I regretted that after the first game. To be fair. I don't know. They're a weird team to watch because I don't watch the championship, so watching someone like Bielsa just sit there is very strange to me. Because you know managers are meant to coach the players, and he's just sat in his bucket. It's just, yeah, I mean, not a fan of that.
Well, it works clearly.
And he's still sat on his bucket. It's just like there's no change in emotion. He's just. There's part of me that just thinks he's not this big manager
that well,
made out him to be.
Well, no, I mean, you know, to put him in the top three best coaches of 2020 was absolutely ridiculous. And you know, you got people saying, you know, he's the best manager in the world. Like, he's not. But I do think that he is a very good manager, Bielsa. He does have a good mind. It's just the fact that he is one of the most stubborn bastards I've ever heard of in management. You know, he will not change his system, no matter who he's playing, which is sort of admirable and sort of, you know, thick, because, you know, you get games where they're very competitive and they score a lot of goals, and then you get games where they get absolutely thumped. You know, they've only drawn two games all season, which you think if they did change their system just to be a little bit more pragmatic, they could have grinded out a few more draws than they have done this season. But, you know, it's clearly working for them, Leeds, because they're far higher than I think I certainly expected them to be. I thought they'd be sort of around that, you know, 14th, 15th place, but they're exceeding that. And part of that is, and I'm throwing up when I'm saying this, part of that is down to Patrick Bamford. You know, he's already hit double figures this season. And I don't know what it is about him, because he wasn't even that good in the championship last season. But he's just been far more clinical than he ever was last season. And he's been a key part of them climbing the table.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, some of the goals he does score, they're easy. But then others, you think, how the hell has he done that, considering the player that I've seen him to be?
Yeah, and that was something in the championship as well, where it would take him two or three big chances to score one. And he has been a lot more clinical this season. But there are still a couple of instances where you point out and think that's the Bamford of the championship. But at the end of the day, he's got 10 goals halfway through the season, so you can't really criticise him too much.
I mean, I don't know. Leeds are strange, very strange, because that United game, they were, I can't remember what the score was.
Ended up 6-2.
Yeah, it should have been definitely more for United. And they were still playing like it was 0-0. It was so strange.
Well, that's what I'm on about, is Bielsa's stubbornness.
Is it stubbornness or naivety?
Well, I think it's probably a bit of both. You know.
Like, the last batch of results, like, they can beat a team like Newcastle 5-2, then they go and lose to Man United 6-2. It's just things change in like the blink of an eye. It's so strange.
Yeah, it's not... It's definitely not consistent, is something I'll say about this lead side. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't criticise them too much because they're sat in 12th halfway through the season and newly promoted side. You know, the first objective always needs to be to survive, to get to that 40-point threshold. And it looks like Leeds are going to do that with ease.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, like, where did you predict them to be?
Well, I thought they'd be roughly in a similar sort of position as where, like, Crystal Palace are. You know, sort of always, like, flirting with the relegation zone, but ultimately pulling away from it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I can't see Leeds being down there come the end of the season.
Oh, no, definitely not. I'm definitely with the state of the bottom three now. Yeah, I don't really have much else to add on Leeds other than they're exciting to watch. But it's just very peculiar to me to watch a team losing quite heavily and then acting like nothing's going on wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're all done anyway. I'm going to move on to Arsenal, who... Yeah, the, it is funny at the end of the day. It would have been funnier if they went down, but they're not going to. But it's still pretty funny.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're sticking with Arteta. But then I just look at... Yeah, I am surprised they're sticking with Arteta because they've spent a lot of money and they should not be in the position they are. Yet they are, still are. I mean, yes, they climb up the table now, but I think too much damage has been done for them to even consider looking into challenging for, you know, top six. Would you agree with me on that or not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's sort of like what we were saying about Bruce is that he has been very pragmatic this season. I think, you know, some of the football, you know, I'm a Burnley fan, so I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, boring football is awful. But boring football when you're not getting results is one of the worst things because, you know, when they play, you know, expansive, optimistic football, you know, open football, they get results, as we've seen in the Europa League and as we've seen them starting to do now with the 3 wins out of 3. But, you know, he's just been far too pragmatic until recently, has Arteta. He's not been given the players the freedom to get forward, to create chances. You know, and that was what we've seen against, you know, Brighton, against Chelsea, against... West Brom, you know, we've seen it, you know, with the people like Smith Rowe coming in, you know, going to a 4 at the back formation, moving Aubameyang to his striking position, you know, that's been a huge factor in, you know, the returning to form. And Lacazette as well is someone who should be mentioned. You know, last season performed pretty poorly, but he's got 7 goals this season. And he's been a huge part, well, not a huge part, but he's been a big part, certainly, in Arsenal's upturn in form, the fact that he's been scoring when Aubameyang isn't.
Yeah, but I still think Lacazette's been poor. He misses a lot of big chances.
Yeah, I mean, you know, He's not been, you know, brilliant by any means, but, you know, he's got one goal every other game, which averages out to just under 20 goals a season. He's got a goal every 123 minutes. That can't be overlooked, especially considering Arsenal haven't really been creating much. They've really been lacking a key creator. Someone like a Mesut Ozil, for example, could have come in handy.
I think they're past that point.
The bridges have been burned there, and I think it's... I don't think it's a footballing decision, that, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to sign anyone this window, though. It seems to be very tight. And, well, then I say that, but then they're going to spend loads of money. But will that be at the expense of more staff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know. Yeah, it's not been the best look, you know. Furloughing 80 staff and then going out and buying Partey.
Yeah. That was very scummy. Kroenke, Arsenal is essentially his personal ATM.
Yeah, essentially. You know. Arsenal makes all the money for him that he goes and spends in America when he goes and spends on, you know, his basketball teams.
Yeah. Would have been funny if Arsenal went down. That would have been pretty indicative of his ownership.
Oh, yeah, it would have been funny.
Very negligent.
Yeah.
Who does he own in America?
I've no idea. I won't be able to tell you.
I was going to ask if they were good or not. But... Yeah.
But yeah, it's not been great for Arsenal. Yeah.
There's a lot of players there that should not be wearing an Arsenal shirt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Do you think we'll see a lot of outgoings this month?
Well, that is something that's been mentioned, is that Arteta wants to get rid of a lot of the dead wood in the squad. You know, you hear names like Socrates, Mustafi, Holding, Chambers, you know, people like them sort of players, you know, being shifted on. In order to raise funds for some more players. And I think we will see a mass exodus. Well, not a mass exodus, but I think we'll see quite a few players on the chopping block.
Raise a lot of money from the players you've mentioned.
No, not really.
They might have to be looking in League One. What's the players
you've
mentioned? I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean... there is, you know, I don't know the full ins and outs with the broadcasting rights there, but, you know, I do know that a lot of teams there are going to be struggling to pay staff, you know. I know, obviously, the likes of PSG and Lyon and Monaco will be fine, but, you know, a lot of the lower end teams will be struggling to pay staff, so we will probably see a mass exodus. So I won't be surprised if Arsenal did capitalise on that. I mean, we've seen them go into that market quite a bit, so... I'm assuming you meant the French league and not the third tier of English football.
No, I did mean the third tier of French football. No, sorry, third tier of English.
Third tier of French football? Is that Arsenal's level now?
Ligue 3.
Ligue 3. At least I assume it'd be Ligue 3. Domino's or...
No.
Is it Domino's or Uber Eats Ligue 3?
No, I meant... League One, because I doubt they get... How much is Ozil being sold for? if he's. I don't even think they're going to get a fee for him, are they?
I don't think they're getting a fee for him, but it's not having to pay him $350,000 a week.
Yeah. But wasn't he paying some of the Arsenal staff?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of them that were on furlough went and worked in... Because I know he's got quite a few cafes in London. Okay. So I think I heard that some of them went and worked there.
Well, I hope that the club sorts those staff out.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not like Arsenal are struggling to pay the bills at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A sufficient club, is it?
Exactly. But is that all you want to say on Arsenal, or let's move on?
Yeah, who should they get from League One?
They should get Marcus Madison, Portsmouth player.
Yeah. I don't even know who that is, so yeah.
He was linked with us before we ended up not going. That's the only reason I know who he is.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll move on to West Ham. I think, you know, like they've performed real decently this season. I think, you know, even though, you know, they didn't really bring in anyone in the summer, it was just Benrahma on loan. You know, they've performed really well this season. What's that?
Is that an obligation to buy for Benrahma?
I'd assume there is. I can't say whether there is or there isn't, but I assume that there would be. But yeah, they've performed really well this season. I mean, you're looking at players like Suchek, who's, you know, been an absolute bargain. I mean, 15 million for Suchek, you know, it's an absolute bargain. And then you know, you're looking at other players like Bowen, who's performed really well. What's that?
Did you say Benrahma was there any signing?
It was Benrahma on loan, and there was probably one or two others that I'm forgetting.
Kufal or Chufal?
Oh, yeah, Kufal, yeah.
Yeah. He's been.
I just assumed he were already there.
No. They got him from the same club they got Suchet from, Sparta Prague.
Right.
Which I think that they've done a good job there.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think the only thing that West Ham could do with at the moment is a new forward. I mean, they've sold Allaire. Antonio, I'm not too sure about his injuries, when he's coming back and stuff. I think he's coming back soon. But yeah, I think they could do with a new forward. But you know, it's not urgent because West Ham are doing more than fine at the moment, especially considering the position that they were in last season. They're doing great.
Yeah, agreed. Not really too much you can criticise them on.
No.
I think,
yeah,
David Moyes' side, they're overachieving considering what he's been after leaving Everton.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of with him taking the Man United job. I think it were, you know, it was too much for him. You know, any manager would have struggled taking over that Man United side. You know, it's like when Don Revie left Leeds. You know, even the greatest English manager of all time, Brian Clough, even he couldn't do well with that. So, you know, David Moyes is going to struggle from taking over from Alex Ferguson. I think any manager would. And especially when you hear, A, about how poor the squad was, really. I mean, it was a miracle that Ferguson won that title in his last season. And B, some of the drama off the pitch, you know, it was never going to work out. I still think Moyes is a good manager. And I think that...
even after that Sunderland run?
Yeah, but Sunderland was a sinking ship.
Mm-hmm.
Any manager would have gone down with them. I think Jurgen Klopp would have gone down with them. Yeah, I just think, you know, I think Moyes is a good manager. And I think West Ham, you know, they're not going to be challenging for Europe or all like that. But, you know, they're going to have a good, solid season, which after last season of, you know, being 4 or 5 points above the relegation zone at the end of the season, you know, they needed just a solid season where no exciting happens, but it's very stable.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But yeah, I mean, there's not really much else to say on that front. But I'm sure there will be for you on this front. I'll just let you loose. You know, talk to me about Chelsea.
We should not be sticking with Frank Lampard. He is very clear. He does not know what he is doing. There are certain players he sticks with that should not be in the Chelsea squad, considering who we have. I don't know why he sticks with Mason Mount. Was it because he was at Derby with him?
I mean, I think Mount's a decent little player. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not amazing, but he's still good.
But he picks him over Kovacic. He picks him over Jorginho.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, that is stupid.
I'm pretty sure he's probably played every game this season. And then there's players like Reece James. Yes, they're good in attack, but absolutely woeful in defence. And he's not coaching him on that. Werner, he does not look like he knows how to play football. It's like he's completely fine. It's like, I don't know, it's like he's gone back to being a child again. It's weird. I have it's probably one of the worst signings this season. Probably one of the worst signings in our history. I know it's pretty early to judge, but for the fee that it's commanded to bring him in, he's done nothing besides a hat trick against Barnsley. I think it's Barnsley. Thiago Silva, very good player. That was a miracle to bring him in. He has made a few mistakes, i.e. the game against West Brom. Then when we brought in Mendy, I mean, he had a good start coming in, you know, equal to Cech's debut season in the first few games. And now we're talking about, oh, let's bring in a new goalkeeper. So, I'm assuming they've already gone off him. Well, at least the probably paper's probably talking shit.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is silly season. You get all sorts of...
Your mic is really quiet.
I said it is silly season. You get all sorts of rumours now.
Yeah. Who else have we signed?
Chilwell's been good.
Oh, he's been really good, actually, in fairness. Yeah, very good player. We signed Malang Sarr, then loaned him out. I don't know why we loaned out Ross Barkley. A player like him would have been perfect right now. Because we lack a midfielder with drive to go forward. Mm. So yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. I just feel like he doesn't play to his play strengths, Lampard. I mean, you look at, you know, how did Leverkusen get the best out of Kai Havertz? Well, they played him as a number 10, two traditional wingers on either side of him, and a big centre forward up front. What does Lampard do with Havertz? Plays him on the right wing. You know, you look at how did Leipzig get the best out of Timo Werner? They put him up front with Forsberg, you know, a big striker who'll win the headers for. Not Forsberg, Poulsen, my apologies. A big striker or win the headers, knock him down for Werner, who can get in behind and score. What does Lampard do with Werner? He either puts him on the left wing or he puts him up front on his own where he's isolated. It feels like he doesn't play to his player's strengths. And the players that have played well this season, Thiago Silva, Chilwell, that's because he's playing to their strengths. And I just feel like Lampard, he's tactically inflexible. He's very stubborn. And I feel like he is holding this Chelsea team back.
Yeah, agreed. There's so many great managers out there right now. I don't know why we just don't pull the trigger on him. Bring in Tuchel, bring in Allegri, somebody. I mean, we could have had Pochettino, but his dream job is PSG, in fairness. And especially after that 3-1 loss to City. It's just strange why we'd stick with him. We're currently sat in 9th, 10th?
9th, yeah.
Yeah, and we're halfway through the season.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if Lampard was not an ex-player, he would not still be Chelsea manager.
Agreed, yeah.
I just think that, you know, that there's so many better options. And I mean, from all reports, anyway, the Chelsea board want to stick with Lampard, which, you know, it's admirable because that's completely unlike them to stick with managers. You know, usually we've seen them be trigger happy. You know, Sarri won 2 trophies with you and got you to another cup final. You know, and if he gets sacked for doing that and Lampard doesn't for finishing outside of Europe, you know, like, what sort of message does that send?
Yeah. I mean, even if, yes, we did go on a 17-game unbeaten run, but in the last 6 games, 4 defeats, one of which we were 1-0 up against Wolves and then lost it in the last few minutes. We got destroyed in the first half against City. Yes, we won the second half 1-0, but I think City just put their foot off the pedal, really.
Yeah, that's only the second time in Premier League history that Chelsea have conceded 3 in the first half. Do you know when the other time was?
Against City?
No, it's against Burnley. Opening day of the season in 2017.
Just 3-2.
Yeah.
I would have thought the City game because we lost 6-0. But...
yeah. They weren't in the first half, but Burnley's were. Which, you know, fucking City, of course they had to ruin that. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
Thanks for that brilliant stat.
It was important that I got that out. I was holding it in.
Um, We got Fulham next. And then we've got Leicester and Wolves. I mean, I don't think top four is a reality for us as long as we stick with Lampard. Maybe not even Europa League.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got, you know, you'd think that, you know, Liverpool, Manchester United, and probably Leicester have top four. And then you're looking at Spurs, who are definitely contenders for top four. You've got Man City, who are breathing down the necks. You've got Southampton and Everton, and Aston Villa as well, who are outside contenders. You know, you can't really see Chelsea finishing above loads of them.
I think people are writing off City because, yes, they're sat in fifth. They have two games in hand. If they win that, they're top of the league by 2 points. Yeah, I mean, I thought we were in with a decent chance against City because of their COVID outbreaks and, you know, the injury problems they've been having. I mean, last night they were they had like 6 youth players on there. I mean, you'd think, and we haven't had to resort to that. And yet we lost 3-1. I mean, I'm fearful of when we play Liverpool again. Because they're going to be ruthless.
Yeah.
You know, consecutive title. And then we play Atleti, who might just piss all over us because we're not going to score past them. They've got the best defence in their league. Conceding only 5-6 goals.
Yeah, somewhat stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, 6 goals.
Conceded 6 goals in 15 games. I mean, that is just stupid.
Like, yeah. So, you know, you can write off scoring against them, even though Bayern put 4 past them. We're not Bayern.
Mind you, they did get knocked out of the Copa del Rey yesterday against a third-tier side. You know, they were playing on a 5-a-side pitch almost.
Yeah.
And they got knocked out.
Cornella or Cornea?
I'd assume Cornea because it's Spanish.
Yeah. That is genuinely shocking, but aside from that, I think they're going to walk all over us. And the rest of the campaign is not going to be a bright one for us unless we change who's in the hot seat.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know. The thing is, I always like to give managers time. Like, I don't think it's fair to, you know, judge managers after a season or after a bit. But Lampard has had the time, he's had the funds, he's had the means to imprint his own style onto this Chelsea side, and he hasn't done it. You know, how would you say Chelsea play? Because I wouldn't be able to tell you. If someone asked me, what is Chelsea's style of play, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how would you describe it? How would you describe Chelsea's play style?
Manic.
Exactly. It says it all, you know.
But, I mean, part of me feels like when all else fails, we just stick back to, oh, yeah, let's just put it out wide, put some crosses in. But we've got nobody who...
Which is all right if you're playing Giroud up front, but he's refusing to...
And then it doesn't help when you've got a right back in Reece James who can't defend as good as his crosses are.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not good, I'd say. It's not looking good for Chelsea. But, you know, I don't know, it's just yeah, it's not looking good for you. But yeah, we're gonna move on to Aston Villa unless you've got all else you wanna add.
No, it's just in that depression.
Put a pin in that. Yeah, well, we'll move on to Aston Villa then. Go on, what are your thoughts on Villa? How they've done this season?
Amazingly. Two games in hand. If they win them, they will be in the top four. Yeah, I mean, under Dean Smith, it's complete black and white from last season. Better now. The signings he's made have been brilliant. I think the standout ones have definitely been Matty Cash and Ollie Watkins. And Emi Martinez. Ross Barkley's played his part in the games he's had, particularly in that Liverpool game, which shocked us all. Bertrand Traoré has been, like 3 goals this season. But I find a lot of the time he does go missing.
Yeah, he's not been, you know, brilliant. Yeah, there's room for improvement, you'd say.
I mean, the standout player has definitely been Jack Grealish. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I think this season started to highlight why Gareth Southgate saw in Tyrone Mings last season to pick him for England.
I don't know. I still don't think he's been great. I think Konsa has shone a lot brighter than Mings this season, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, Konsa's another good shout. And while Gatsby's been brilliant, it's kind of hard to find a fault in that team, really.
Yeah, they have been excellent as this Villa team.
And they'll probably look to expand on that in this window. Look to get rid of the deadwood. Probably like Vesely.
Well, I mean, they could do with more clinical goals from out wide, I'd say. Villa. I think Grealish and Watkins have been doing really well, but apart from that, the forwards haven't really been scoring. I mean, like you said, with Traore as well as, you know, like El Ghazi. So maybe they could potentially be looking at moving Watkins out wide, maybe to the right, and putting Wesley up front. I don't know. But I think Wesley will be kept around. I think he's a different option to what they have at the moment.
Has Trezeguet had a good season?
I wouldn't say standout season, really.
Squad depth is probably something they should be looking into. But as for the 11 they picked, no fault whatsoever. Hopefully it continues, because I like seeing a bit of someone, you know, coming through and challenging for the top four, like we've seen with Leicester in recent years. We were starting to see it with Wolves, but they've dropped off. Just hope that doesn't happen to them. I don't know if it's not an expensive Chelsea, of course.
But yeah, they have been, you know, pretty good performers this season of Villa. And, you know, speaking of good performers. We've got Everton, who started off the season so good, honestly. They were absolutely immense at the start of the season, but they've really dropped off. And it will be disappointing for Everton fans because we're starting to talk about, finally, this is the year we break into the top six, we break into the top four. They're currently sat in seventh, level on points with Spurs, Man City and Southampton, with a game in hand on Southampton. So it's not disastrous for them. It's definitely a lot better than last season. But with the start that they had, you know, they could perhaps be a little bit disappointed that they aren't sat higher on the table, especially given the form of Dominic Calvert-Lewin being one of the best forwards this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah, it all started going downhill after the Liverpool game. Maybe the controversies got to some players. I'm not quite sure. I do think they're set for a spot in Europe, whether that'll be Europa League or Champions League, we're yet to see. There are probably a few faults that you could poke in that Everton team. I don't think Richarlison's done great.
No, he's not been as good as he was last season, really, to be honest with you. I think he was a lot better last season than he has been this season.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, just they do concede a lot. Even, you know, they might win a game, but it's usually like 4-2, 3-2.
Well, I mean, you say that. They've conceded 20 goals this season, which is less than all of the top three.
Yeah, I mean, there's games where they win 4-2, 3-2, whatever. But then they go and lose 1-0 to West Ham. So they can go and score three or four past other teams, and then they'll just get their strikers, well, their attack goes missing. Maybe if they had, they probably need to look out for a winger. I don't know. James has been really good. Maybe a left winger then.
Yeah, I think probably some more squad depth, really, because you've seen, once the first team gets injured, you've seen, you know, players who aren't probably up to the standard coming in, creeping back into that first team. You know, you're looking at Sigurdsson, you're looking at Davies, you're looking at Iwobi. You know, so more squad depth, in my opinion, is what's needed.
I think the talk of Pickford, I think that's been silenced now. Being a liability, that's been silenced. Because seeing only 20 goals, you know, considering how Everton were last season and now they're looking to strive in the Europe, I think that he's definitely been consistent.
Would you really say that?
Well, yeah, he's only conceded 20 goals.
Yeah, I know, but you look at some of the goals that he has conceded, you know, and they have been poor. I mean, you know, he got dropped for a while, do you remember? So, you know, there's no way that he should be England number one. I don't care what you say.
I disagree with that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that should either go to Pope or Alex McCarthy.
Hmm.
Maybe Forster after his performance against Liverpool.
Hmm.
That's only one game though.
Yeah, and I think even Darlow has performed well this season as well.
Yeah, and Sam Johnston. Maybe not actually. We'll concede a lot, but he has made a lot of saves.
He has made a lot of saves. And, you know, there's a lot of keepers who have performed well this season. There's a lot of English keepers that have performed well this season that, you know, won't get a look in for the England squad, but, you know, never mind.
Bobby Woodman is one of them. Freddy.
But you know, I don't know. I still don't rate Pickford. But you know, Everton are looking a lot more healthier than they were last season. And yeah, you know, like you say, they are definitely contenders for European football. But yeah, we'll move on to a club what, you know, I quite intelligently, you know, predicted that they would perform really well this season. You know, they've only lost two games in the last 3 months. Recently getting a win over the Premier League champions. Southampton, who are currently sat in sixth place, only conceded 19 goals in 17 games. You know, they've just been brilliant, haven't they, Southampton?
100%. Hasenhüttl has been incredible. Ever since that 9-0 loss to Leicester, that gave him a complete kick up the arse. And then they go and beat Liverpool the other day. Which not many clubs can claim to do whilst Klopp has been in charge. I'm not sure whether Europe is a realistic goal for them, because Danny Ings has been injured quite a lot this season, and then when he's gone, they don't score as many. But they have been fortunate in that when they haven't got Danny Ings, they've been playing lesser sides.
And I think there's something to be said about Che Adams as well. He's performed a lot better this season than he did last season.
Agreed. Having said that, there are teams below them that have games over them. So when that's sorted out, it'd be interesting to see where they'll be standing. Yeah, it's very strange to be in a position where Southampton are above Chelsea.
It's definitely an unusual season, this. I think a team like Southampton, you know, they've really done well to capitalise on, you know, the strangeness of this season. It's just been a great season for Hasenhüttl. I think some of the signings that they've made have been excellent. You know, bringing Walcott on loan. The swap deal with Kyle Walker-Peters for Højbjerg. You know, it's, you know, talk about the transfer that's, you know, worked out for both clubs. You know, that's been great. And yeah, they haven't spent loads of money, Southampton, but they've just performed really well this season.
If they had financial backing, like, you know, Arsenal did, you know, they may not have scored, spent as much. You know, the other clubs, Arsenal. But if Saints did, it'd be interesting to see where they were, because Hasenhüttl just has a way of bringing in these cheap players, but turning them into just great, just getting the best out of them, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know,
Salisu.
Yeah, well, I think he's been unlucky with injuries, I think. Salisu. But, you know, yeah, it's, you know, been an excellent season for Hasenhüttl. And I'm sure he's hoping that he can continue that into the second half of the season.
Maybe he does, because, you know, I do have a soft spot for Saints, so. And, you know.
You should get that checked out. Get your doctor to look at it.
I like seeing clubs, overachieve. Like Watford did. They got to an FA Cup final and finished 10th.
Yeah.
End up getting relegated, but...
Ah, that's a different story, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, doing really well, and I'm going to take a victory lap because I predicted it. A team who's not doing as well as people would have predicted at the start of the season, Manchester City. Despite all of the talk of Manchester City's defence being poor, that seems to be the general consensus or the stereotype of Man City. They've only conceded 13 goals in 15 games. It's the best defence in the league. But they've really not been clinical up front at all, and that's what's costed them. The injury to Aguero has meant that for a lot of games they've been playing without a centre forward, and I think that'll be something that Pep will be desperate for in this window.
I disagree with you.
Alright.
Because City have two games in hand. If they win them, as I mentioned earlier, they'll be top of the league. So I don't think it's fair to say that they're doing bad when, theoretically, if everyone has played the same games, City could be top of the league.
I guess I can see where you're coming from, really.
Well, here's their next four games. I think they're, six games even, are very winnable. Brighton, Palace, Villa, West Brom and Sheffield United, then Burnley. I think they're definitely in with a shout for a title this season. But I think fifth is unflattering because of the fact that they've had to postpone a game due to COVID, and then them and United having to start the season a week later. Be rectified.
I think, you probably are right, to be fair. But I still back my point that they could do with another forward because, for a Pep Guardiola team, 24 goals in 15 games, for Manchester City, it's not great. They should be being more clinical.
I agree with you there. I'm assuming the next six games will definitely flatter the goals they're going to be scoring. That may sort that issue out. Maybe bring some confidence to their front line. At the same time, there could be a game in there where where it's a draw because they're unable to kill the game off.
Yeah.
What have you made of Ferran Torres?
I think he's been a very good signing. I think for, the fact that he was only, 20 million? Or something like that. I think they got a right bargain there with Torres. He's only 20 years old. And he's looked lively whenever he's played, I think he's been a good signing there, definitely.
Mm-hmm. 20 million for a 20-year-old. That a lot of top clubs were definitely sniffing around for. Yeah, definitely good sign. Also, Ruben Diaz has been part of that back line, which, as you mentioned, is the best defence.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been really good. You sort of went, do you not think so?
No, I think he has been a good signing. I just went, as an agreeance. You can't say that the defence hasn't been great. I mean, they've got two really quality centre-backs in Diaz and Laporte. And whenever Ake has been sorted in at left-back, he's done all right. You've got two good right-backs in Cancelo and Walker. So they have got a good defence of Man City, and I think the signing of Ruben Diaz definitely helped that.
Yeah, and despite having the best defence, Ruben Diaz has been the only player that's been a constant. Even when you look at the goalkeeper, Stefan's had to step in.
Mm.
So, despite that, you know, the five players in that defence and only one, you know, being a constant and everyone else changing, just goes to show how great Diaz has been.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, even John Stones has been one of the best players this season for City.
He's only played 6 games, though. 7 games.
Really? Feels like he's played more. Well, whenever he has played, I've been impressed with him, at the very least.
Was that only because he scored last night?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I just think, defensively, he's been really good this season.
Yeah. I think there's... There needs to be some signings this season from City in regards to squad depth, because having to field players like Liam Delap and then they had players like Harwood Bellis or something on the bench last night.
Mm.
That's an issue that might bite them in the arse, you know, 2-3 months down the line. Because, you know, they're having COVID outbreaks. It's affected a few clubs now.
So, yeah.
You know, if that happens to a key player, then they're screwed.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think they've really tested themselves with that. What am I on about? Jesus Christ, I can't spit my sentences out. God, we've been going too long. No, but I think they really have been stretched in terms of the COVID. In terms of the... Oh, what the fuck am I... What's the word?
Outbreak, is that what you're on about?
No, like, the players that have been out.
Like, okay.
Absentees, I'll say. Even though that wasn't the word I'm looking for. But they've really been struggling with them. And, you know, I think if all their players were back or they had a bit more squad depth, we would be seeing City being closer to the top of the table. But like you say, they've got games in hand. So it is probably less flattering than it is.
Mm-hmm. But I will agree with you on the lack of goal from, even though the next 6 games should see them get close to Liverpool. Because Liverpool have got a mixed bag of games coming up with the likes of Man United and Spurs, and they've obviously got you, who have a very sturdy defence.
Mm. Yeah, but we always concede loads against Man City. I don't know what it is. It must just be a mentality thing.
No, I meant Liverpool there.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm off the ball now. We've been going too long. Let's just get these four done. Spurs, go on. Let me know what you thought about Spurs this season, Harry.
They're scoring more than City. They've conceded only 2 less. However, they're on the same points, haven't played a game more. That's pretty indicative of them not being able to kill the game off. I mean, the partnership of Son and Kane is unbelievable. I don't even think there's been a game this season where one of them haven't scored.
Oh.
I could be wrong in saying that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They drew 0-0 with us. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Oh, and they lost 2-0 against Leicester as well.
I am 1-0 against Everton. Alright, I'm going to shut up.
But there won't have been many games then where they didn't combine to score.
Mm-hmm. And then there have been games where they're drawing with the likes of Wolves and Palace, which are teams you'd expect them to beat with the attack that they've got. Defensively, they've got very few issues. In attack, it is pretty much Kane and Son carrying them. And if both of them happen to have an off game, then they're in trouble. I mean, it's only happened 3 times this season, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of positions where they could do with improving in the market. I mean, I think there could be, or there should be, I should say, looking for another centre-half. I think that's somewhat what should be looked at, and probably another centre-mid as well, especially with Dele Alli looking like he's on the way out. Rumours of him going to PSG on loan.
Is that because of Pochettino?
Yeah, that's because of Pochettino. They have a... they really like each other, Ali and Pochettino, so...
Okay. Bale has been very disappointing for the player he was at Spurs. I mean, I think a few would have probably predicted that because of the inconsistencies at Real Madrid and the fact he wanted to play golf more than he wanted to play. I think when Carlos Vinicius has come in Europa League games, he's done a very good job. So for them, they should only be looking at a new centre back, midfielder, and a winger. Because Lucas has been poor as well.
Which is a surprise, really, considering how he's been good these last few seasons, Lucas. I think that Spurs are... Well, whatever happens this season, it's better than last season. And I think the goal will have been to finish in the top four. So, you know. I think, you know, that'll be the main goal for Spurs this season, is to finish in the top four. And I think they do have a decent chance of doing that.
Should we move on?
Yeah, we'll go to Leicester. Go on. What are your thoughts on Leicester, Harry?
Can't fault them in any shape or form, right? That it's all praise from me for them. I think they've done a spectacular job. That's about as minimal analysis as you're going
to get. Yeah, I mean, you know, they have been lucky with penalties. I mean, a lot of people bring up Man United, but Leicester have had 10 penalties this season. But, you know, they have played very well this season. I mean, I thought they'd struggle to balance this and the Europa League. But, you know, it turns out that they can handle both pretty well, finishing top of their Europa League group. You know, going to face Slavia Praga in the round of 32. And, you know, they're currently sat third in the league, pushing for Champions League football as they were last season. I think some of the signings that they've made haven't been great. I think Under and Fofana both, they've yet to hit the stride fully. But, you know, I think that, you know, they're performing really well. Yeah, I don't know what to say. They're just doing really well.
Expert analysis by the two of us.
I know. Well, I don't really know what to say. Like, you know.
Yeah, there probably isn't anything that's been said about them that's not been said before.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, let's get into Man United.
Yeah. They really started off slowly this season, Man United, but, you know, ever since the 1-0 loss to Arsenal, they haven't lost a game in the league. Ole has really managed to turn it round. And, you know, yeah, they've just been brilliant this second half of the season. Well, I say second half of the season. The second half of the first half of the season.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I think they've been incredibly lucky. A lot of decisions have gone their way that really shouldn't have. I'm referencing the Pogba incident in their last league game, which was never a penalty in a million years.
No. I mean, I don't think it was a dive because he caught... He tripped over himself. It wasn't a dive, but it certainly wasn't a penalty.
Yeah, and I feel like that's always been the occasion growing up that United have the authority bias from referees.
Mm.
They always get decisions, like the dodgy decisions. And I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying they've had the most penalties all time in the Premier League.
Yeah.
It used to be Liverpool. I think they've overtaken them in the last couple of seasons. Yeah, without Bruno Fernandes, they wouldn't be in the position now.
Oh, no, 100%. I think it was clear last season the impact that Bruno Fernandes had with them. Yeah, I just think he's been brilliant, you know? Like, he's clearly made a brilliant impact. And, yeah, I just think he's made all the difference. I think he's a marvellous player. And there's a reason that people compare him to Kevin De Bruyne.
Well, he's definitely been better than him in recent times.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just hate seeing them in the position they are.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Childhood, seeing them win everything all the time and just being pissed at that. Yeah. Man United bad.
Yes, Man United bad. Yeah, and that just leaves us with Liverpool sat at the top of the table. You know, they've not been brilliant this season, Liverpool, but, you know, they've managed to grind out results consistently. You know, the loss against Southampton was the first loss in the league since the 7-2. You know, so they have consistently managed to grind out results and stay at the top of the league, which is what they need to do. You know, you've seen players like Jota and Thiago, when they've played, have been brilliant signings. And Liverpool are still the team to beat.
Yeah. You say they haven't been brilliant, but they have been riddled with injuries of key players, and yet, despite having to rely on players who clearly aren't ready, the likes of the two Phillips and Nico Williams.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, and then the fact that they're top of the league, that does speak highly of the players around them, who probably don't get enough credit. I mean, I can't believe that there's rumours that Gini Wijnaldum's leaving. I think he's a phenomenal player. Yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool need to be keeping as many players as they can.
Really.
And to sign in players, because squad depth wasn't an issue last season because they didn't have injuries. And then the lack of signings, knowing that COVID was strife and that, you know, games were coming thick and fast.
Mm.
That was very poor handling by the board.
Well, I think it was just being sensible. They could have gone down the Arsenal route and sacked a load of staff and probably signed a couple of players.
Yeah, they followed staff, didn't they? And they got a load of backlash.
Well, they did, but they ended up backtracking, unlike Arsenal.
Did Spurs do it as well?
Spurs did, yeah.
Yeah. Very annoying.
Aye.
Yeah, I can't really fault Liverpool because the loss they had to Villa was definitely one of the most shocking. The loss against Saints was just a case of excellent defending. Mm. And Saints didn't let them create any chances. Other than that, I don't think there's much to really point at Liverpool to say they've gone wrong. As long as they keep the freak results to just the Liverpool match, or the Villa match.
Yeah.
I mean, you do expect the big teams to lose to a team like Saints now and then. So, as long as they... I mean, to be fair, last season, they went ages until they got their first loss. It was 3-0 against Watford.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they were absolutely immense last season. I mean, you know, this season, you know, it has to be said, they've only lost twice. It just feels like they've been worse because they've been getting more draws than wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they had their key players, I think they'd be unbeaten, probably.
Mm, I think they'd still be running away with it, would yeah. Liverpool.
Yep.
All right. And yeah, it looks like they're trying to shift on some Deadwood players. You know, we've already mentioned Origi, but people like Shaqiri, you know, players of that sort of ilk in the squad. You know, they're looking at being shifted on. So perhaps we could see, you know, one big signing coming into Liverpool, which, you know, as if they need it.
Where would that be?
No idea.
We do not know what position.
Well, probably a forward, I don't know. Especially if they sell Shaqiri and Origi.
Oh, okay, that's a good point. Yeah, that's the league done then.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, is there all else you want to add on that we haven't covered?
No.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it, I think. It's a bloody long return episode. 2.5 hours we've nearly been going for. So, yeah, you got you want to plug?
I'll plug my Twitter, @HansesChelseaFC.
Yep, and I'll plug mine, @IWGPChrisBFC, and you can follow the podcast, @AntiFootballPod. That's it for us, and we'll see you next time.